I'm Dr. Gene Hensler, and this is Money Talks. My staff and I will give you fact-based, no-nonsense answers to your financial questions. To have your questions answered on the air, send them to me, drgene@hensler.com. That's drgene@hensler.com.
This broadcast of Money Talks originally aired Saturday, June 18th, 2022.
The only thing we have to fear.
The economic health of this nation has
there are
been.
Four essential economic freedoms.
The excessive decline.
Greed.
In the dollar.
For lack of a better word.
A late rally on Wall Street.
Too big to fail.
Growing the economy.
Growing the economy.
Good paying jobs.
Good paying jobs.
Welcome.
This is Money Talks.
Good morning. You're listening to Money Talks, your trusted resource for your money, your future, your life. Might sound like a different voice today. It is. I'm your host, Nick Antonucci, research analyst here at Hensler Financial. Joined today by DJ Barker, managing associate. DJ, what's going on?
How are you?
Good.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's been an exciting week.
It has been.
Also joined today by Zach Alexander.
Hey, good morning.
From our planning department, CRPC and BFA. Zach, tell us what those are, because I will screw it up.
All right. Well, let's start with the BFA. That's the behavioral financial advisor. So puts in a little bit of psychology, neuroscience, and fundamental financial planning. And
the only one at the firm, might I add, right?
Yep. Trying to get that expert designation. And then the Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor. So exactly what it sounds like, helping clients to focus on retirement goals and objectives.
Awesome. Glad Very to have nice. You here, Zach. Yeah, and thanks. Finally, Kelly Lynn.
Hello.
In the house.
I am. How are you doing, Nick?
Good.
Good job on the opening.
Thank you. I didn't screw it up yet.
No, not
There's
at all.
There's still time, though.
Plenty of time. Don't worry.
We will screw it up.
Hey. I have a little magic that I can work behind the scenes.
Wait, we're not live?
I can make you sound good. So.
Well, Carolyn, what are we talking about this
All
week?
Right, let's see. Big news this week. There was a little meeting with the Fed happened.
Oh.
Yeah, go figure.
Interesting.
We're going to cover that. So, of course, also CPI and PPI came out. We'll cover those. Case study this week, what not to do in volatile markets. And Zach, I believe a lot of the behavioral is going to play into that.
Yes.
That sounds timely as well.
Kind of, yeah. And of course, questions later in the show. We've got one on Tesla and something about where to park emergency funds.
Mm. So. Awesome. A lot of timely stuff given what's going on in the market this week. And I guess we can pretty much just jump right into it, guys, right? The volatility continues. It's been a rough start to 2022.
It has.
As we're almost halfway through. I say a rough start, but we're almost halfway through the year already, which
Crazy.
Is wild. But yeah, the volatility continues. You take a look at this week, the last 5 days, the S&P 500 is down 5.63%. Take a step back and we look at the year to date, we're down just under 20%. We fell into bear market territory on Wednesday. That's down 20% from the high, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we got the rate hike, the not so surprised rate hike on Wednesday, and markets moved higher. So got us back above that 20% down point for the year to date period. So we're down 1991. And then you take a 1 year look at it and we're down 8.98%. So if we're just talking, you know, year to date, it's been more of the same. You've got energy up 50%, and it is the only S&P 500 of the 11 sectors, the only one sector that is up for the year, and it is up huge, 50%. Working our way down the list, utilities, the second best, staples, healthcare, the defensive names you would expect in times of volatility, and also, not coincidentally, those sectors that are good inflation hedges that are typically able to pass along higher prices to consumers.
Mm-hmm.
At the other opposite end of the spectrum, worst performing sector year to date, consumer discretionary down 31%. Communication services down just, you know, almost 30%, 29 and change. Information technology down 26%. Real estate down 22%. So it continues to be an ugly year of returns for the S&P 500, but again, I like to put things in perspective. We're coming off back-to-back years of returns over 20%.
Right, right.
You don't get to enjoy those years, you know, consecutively forever without some sort of adjustment to valuations and market conditions.
We forget those times.
And we've been in easy money policy for you know, over a decade, the better part of 15 years at this point.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, is it weird to have 2 years back to back with 20% returns?
Yeah, especially when you consider the rolling 10-year average of S&P 500 back to 1929, or we'll call it large cap stocks, mm-hmm. on a total return basis is about 10.5%.
Okay. Right.
So we've been spoiled. We've been very spoiled.
Yes, we have been
noted.
Very spoiled. And I'd have to look back, but I feel like the only, like really the only down year we've had is slightly negative in the last 5 to 7 years. I'd have to look at, you know, year by year returns, mm-hmm. but it's been good times for some time now.
Yeah. And I think we get complacent. All we do, you know, since 2008, we remember that things are good. And now we're starting to change and people are starting to say, well, goodness, this doesn't feel good. Well, we've seen this and worse before. So it's not, it's just time to correct itself.
Exactly.
It got a little expensive. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be okay.
An easy money policy led to what we all talk about all the time, right? Inflation. Not easy money policy on its own, but easy money policy. So let's kind of look at what we've seen this year, or I'm sorry, this week in terms of economic indicators. So we'll flash back to last Friday. We got the latest CPI data. Came in hot, 8.6% year over year, higher than expected. And when that came out Friday, we had a big sell-off because that signaled to the market, okay, the Fed's got to do more than the 50 basis points that they've guided to in the last meeting. And sure enough, Wednesday, they came out and they hiked 75 basis points.
Yeah. Yep.
I think that was the largest rate since, hike in 28 years.
1994, I think.
And, you know, like I said, markets reacted favorably to it yesterday because it kind of felt as if the Fed was, all right, they're doing what they need to do to cool inflation.
Right. The market likes certainty. It likes some level of clarity, whether it be negative or positive.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you look at, this is Thursday morning, if you look at futures now, it looks like we're set for a sell-off. And what you've had overnight or early morning is you've had the Swiss bank hike interest rates for the first time in, I think, 15 years. Surprise, 50 basis point hike. Wow. You had the Bank of England hike rates 25 basis points today. So it's this global kind of adjustment to say, the easy, you know, inflation, we don't have, you know, a handle on it. The easy money policy has to end.
Right.
And that's what you're seeing. The problem is, and why I think a lot of market participants aren't convinced that this is necessarily going to fix the problem, the Fed on its own, is because the Fed can control monetary policy, but what they can't control is, you know, geopolitical tensions, Russia, Ukraine, right? They can't fix that.
No.
Yep.
So that's going to continue to persist. They can't fix supply chains. So those two big, you know, issues that are leading to high inflation aren't going to go away with the Fed hiking rates. Now, what it does allow you to do is to stifle demand, and hopefully at that point, if the demand's gone, you know, supply chains can start to sort themselves out from a, you know, the imbalance side of things. Not to say they're all going to be running efficiently, but hopefully that's the case. And we, you know, if it is a slowdown, it's short and brief, but that's to be seen. So continuing on through the week, University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Survey fell more than expected in June, dropping below the prior record low set in the depths of the 1980 recession. So you saw present conditions, part of the index fall 7.9 points. The expectations component dropped 8.4 points. So all in all, it was a pretty rough report on the consumer. And I think the Fed recognized that too. In fact, Jay Powell mentioned yesterday in his press conference, you know, how surprised he was by that report. I mean, the consumer surely is reacting. Moving ahead, producer price index came out this week. A little bit lighter than expected, 10.8% year over year compared to the previous reading of 10.9%. Which typically the producer price index leads the consumer price index. So it would make you hope that perhaps next month CPI cools a bit. I'm not so sure.
I don't have a lot of hope.
I think, you know, everyone's kind of clinging to that, but I just don't think that in 2022 you suddenly see this drop in consumer prices. I mean, guys, we had conversations before we went on the air today about, you know, just used car prices, home prices, really anything. We've all experienced it. The price of groceries are up more than 10%. And it's wild. I saw a statistic yesterday. I think they kind of drove it home for me in terms of the home situation. The average mortgage payment, if you'd bought, you know, let's say this $400,000, you picked the home. It was based on a median home price. If you'd bought it at the start of the year versus if you'd bought it today, your payment would be 45% higher today. And that's what happens when you see mortgage rates go up to 6.3 last time I checked.
Actually, we will hear from Shanna Squires from Motto Mortgage Hensler a little bit later in the show, and she will let us know what our current rates are.
Yes.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Way more up-to-date data than I can give you right now. retail sales came out this week, also disappointed. Total sales were down 0.3% after rising revised 0.7% in April. As we talked about, we had the Fed meeting this week. And then lastly, a little bit of news from abroad, the Eurozone GDP, first quarter final number, 0.6% quarter over quarter, up from 0.3% originally. But I think you're going to see a negative print on second quarter GDP in Europe. So we shall see. Kelly Lynn, what do we got coming up?
Coming up next, we've got our movers of the week, and hopefully we will get into, I know we'll talk to Shanna on mortgage rates, and maybe we'll get into that case study if we got time. You're listening to Money Talks, your trusted resource for your money, your future, your life.
Welcome back to Money Talks. I'm your host, Nick Antonucci. And guys, let's get into the movers of the week.
Alrighty.
I will preface it with this. You know it's a rough week when, you know, we typically come in here, we talk about the big gainers, the big losers. We look at these.
The 10 and 10.
It's 10 and 10. It's 10 gainers, 10 losers.
Right.
What does it say when you only have five gainers in the entire S&P 500 for the last 5 days?
I noticed that right after I started the music, and I'm like, holy cow.
And that's before, you know, like I said, this is Thursday morning. The market's not open yet. This is going to be, there's not going to be five.
No.
In 30 minutes, there's not going to be five positive for the previous 5 days.
No. Yeah. No, that's a scary thing for sure. Yeah. And you'll see some of these are not, they're not even 1%, right?
There's three stocks in the S&P 500 that are up more than 1% in the last 5 days.
Yeah. I am up 30.37%.
I'm hanging on.
You are there.
0.37% and I'm positive.
0.3,
that's, go Domino's.
Domino's.
Yeah, right? That's got to be somewhat recession-proof. Anyway, right? So biggest mover for the week on the upside, FedEx. Jumped 10% on Tuesday after announcing it's going to raise its dividend and lower capital spending. I think this is a recurring theme you're going to see, not so much the raising of the dividend, but the cutting of capital spending, right? If, you know, one of the things you could argue is that estimates for corporate profits for the rest of 2022 and 2023 are too high. You'll see a lot of that debated, by the pundits on TV. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would not be the least bit surprised as, you know, corporations start to tighten the purse strings and say, we're going to lower capital spending for the year and try and cushion that bottom line a little bit. Mm. But the market reacted favorably to it. Yeah. Stock, like I said, jumped 10%. It's up 7.19% over the last 5 days. Then you have Duke Realty, kind of a one-off case here. It's up 3.29% over the last 5 days. It was announced that Prologis is making an offer to purchase the warehouse operator, or Duke Realty is getting purchased by the warehouse operator. Moving down the list, CF Industries was up 8% on announcement that Mitsui and Company will sell fuel ammonia made by the firm beginning in 2024. So probably, you know, a good long-term contract there for CF. As you mentioned, Domino's up 0.37%. No particular news there. And then moving down the other side of the spectrum, the losers, it gets pretty ugly if you look down at the bottom.
That's rough.
Recurring theme here, right? So at the bottom, we've got Royal Caribbean, Carnival, Norwegian Cruise Lines, Caesars Entertainment, Expedia Group, American Airlines.
Yeah. What's the theme here, folks?
Yeah, right?
You know,
right?
It's travel, potentially.
But I do think it's interesting only because services seem to be what's dominating right now, while while manufacturing's weakening, or the good side of things is weakening. Services, I think, are doing pretty well. It's and surprises me given the cost of travel right now. It's absurdly expensive to go anywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, the market pricing in what they expect is the future here, and an economic slowdown. And what's the first thing people are going to cut out? A lot of that travel, vacationing, things like that. Also on the list, Alumina, Halliburton, pretty surprising there, given that oil stocks have done so well. And Kraft Heinz. Kraft Heinz was down almost 4%. The chief procurement officer sold 28,855 shares. So, you know, never a good sign when you see your leaders kind of abandoning
ship. Trim some substantial shares there.
Yep, for sure. All right, Kelly Lynn, what we got next?
I thought you wanted to head back into interest rates.
Yes. Well, I mean, why not, given that the Fed did raise this week? What's crazy to me is you look at the 10-year interest rate, right, guys? We talk about this all the time.
Right.
And it's typically you don't have such huge swings within a week. But if you look at where we started the week, 3.15%, we went up to 3.47%. Back down to 3.28% yesterday, and if you look at where futures are this morning, or where interest rates are this morning, 3.44%. I think that's the highest we've seen the 10-year since 2007.
Wow.
So, listen, the market's always forward-looking. You can take what the Fed says all you want, but the market had this spot on before the Fed even started to announce yesterday the 75 basis point hike.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is you look at the short end of the curve, and the moves have been absolutely insane. Not only is the 10-year up 40 bips on the week, but you look at the 2-year, 40 bips.
That's quite a jump.
Yeah. I mean, the moves have been absolutely insane. So, you know, it's a good lead into a question we're going to talk about later. Where's the place that you put your money right now? Because we're in a situation that we haven't been in gosh, over 10 years.
Right.
I mean, you guys know how we buy fixed income for our clients, and it's been such a difficult environment.
Yeah.
You know, you look back a couple years ago, and you would get 25 basis points
maybe
for 2-year money, 50 basis points for 2-year money. And now when you tell people you can get 2.4%, they're like, no, that can't
so
be right.
Is this, now, with the market being down, is this actually a time that you would, like, sell to fill those liquidity buckets now that you got the interest rates for the fixed?
Well, let's, I mean, it's hard to say that you want to sell it. Listen, the worst may not be over.
Has to do, you know, needs it filled. I mean,
if you have a liquidity, I mean, you guys can speak to this better than I can. If you have the liquidity need, it's just hard to encourage someone to sell when things are down so much.
Right.
Exactly.
It just
depends, and that's kind of the purpose of the 10-year rule, so you don't have to do that.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, right? Keep in mind, everyone, that it's the 10-year money, right? So you should have 9 or 10 years close to it. 8, 9, 10 of our clients have had that, right? We trim every year. We did do some trimming at the beginning of the year, but with this market, when you're down 20%, you're probably not going to sell something. You know, again, it depends on what it is, too, right? If someone, we have clients that have been wanting to hold technology. The technology sector year over year has done very well. They didn't want to sell because of why? Gains.
Right.
They don't want to pay taxes.
Guess what?
We just saved you 20%. So now that the technology sector, maybe they still are overweight. So it's a tactical move saying, all right, you didn't want to do it then. Now you lost 20% and you can change it. You still may have taxes. But so there are those conversations we're having.
Well,
now, to just say, look, you need $300,000 in fixed, now may not be the time.
Right.
Of course, if there's a reason for it.
Sure.
You know, yes, something happens and you need to.
Well,
to
you
get
can
the money,
also
there's that.
Balance that with the fact that we talked about energy stocks being up so much, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could kind of play a balancing act where you sell let's say you need to raise $100,000, right? Well, you sell some of that from energy, and so you're taking gains, but you offset some of that with
for
some
losses
of your losing positions.
Right.
So you effectively get out of what
you
can fill that liquidity bucket with minimal tax implications.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just curious because it's like I know we've all been complaining about, you know, oh, we can't get anything in fixed, but now that we can get something, it's like, oh, yeah, but stocks are down. What do you do?
It's a tactical adjustment now, not an emotional adjustment.
Exactly.
That's the biggest thing.
Yep.
Don't sell because I can get a 2.5% CD. All right. Why? What is the intent with the money? What's the tactical change?
Yep.
That's a conversation to have, not just, all right, now I can move something that's potentially losing me money to a 2.5% CD. I don't know if I'd do that.
Right.
The market will recover. The market will come back. And as we know, It's usually a day or two, right? If you take out some of the top days,
the 7 best days you'll over lose the last 10 years, the return difference is incredible.
So, yeah, we just have to think through that.
Again, if you don't need the money, stay invested. That's exactly. what history shows.
100%.
All right, Kelly Lynn, what do we got coming up?
All right. Actually, piggybacking off this conversation, let's talk mortgage rates.
This is your mortgage rate update.
Brought to you by Motto Mortgage Hensler.
Hi, everyone. This is Shanna Squires from Motto Mortgage Hensler. For the week ending June 17th, we're seeing borrower-paid interest rates for 30-year fixed-rate mortgages at about 5.25% and 15-year fixed around 4.125%. And we're seeing borrower-paid interest rates for 5-year ARMs around 5%. So if you know you won't be in your home longer than 5 years, this could be a great option for you. These rates are based off a 750 credit score, but keep in mind you don't need a 750 credit score to qualify for a loan. Many people believe a 20% down payment is required to avoid paying mortgage insurance when purchasing a home. This is not true. We have a loan program available that eliminates mortgage insurance with only 10.1% down. So if a down payment has kept you from applying for a mortgage in the past, know that there are many options available. If you'd like more information or have any mortgage questions, please give me a call at 678-279-5770.
Motto Mortgage Hensler. NMLS 2114586.
Each office is independently owned, operated, and licensed. Student loans, job changes, a growing family. Life's major milestones can have huge impact on your finances. It's time to get control, develop a plan, and tackle your future. Hensler Financial understands investors who may not have significant assets yet, but need significant advice now, customized to your unique needs. The steady road to a stable future is at Hensler.com/financial consulting. That's Hensler.com/financial consulting. If you'd like to have the Money Talks experts answer your question on air, give us a call at 855-429-9166 or email us at drgene@hensler.com. That's D-R-G-E-N-E at hensler.com. We're on most social media platforms under Hensler Financial or on the web at hensler.com and at henslermoneytalks.com. Broadcasting from atop the Hensler Financial Building in the heart of Georgia's financial district, Kennesaw, Georgia, this is Money Talks.
Welcome back to Money Talks. I'm your host, Nick Antonucci, joined today by DJ Barker, Zach Alexander, and Kelly Lynn Scalise. And guys, it is time to get into our case study, right?
Yes.
All right.
All right. I've got Sam and Sheila here. They started seriously investing back in 2009 when they were first married. They were able to get a great house. It was a foreclosure, so they got a great deal on that. They basically followed some sound financial advice, you know, we heard on TV, blogs, radio, that sort of thing, you know, basically a little bit do-it-yourselfers, but portfolios grew quickly in the, what, longest bull market in history?
Right. Yeah. I mean, coming off of 2009?
kind of a big hitting streak.
Yeah, it's like, wow, you entered at the sweet spot.
Welcome to your first major down.
Yeah. Yes. So, and that's exactly what they're going through right now.
Yeah. They're a bit surprised, kind of turning a blind eye for the time that they did.
They kind of missed the pandemic because his job kept him busy. And then she got sick right away at that first wave. And it was like,
focus was elsewhere.
Sure. And now everybody's better. You know, things are starting to come back to normal. And they're like,
what's happening?
20%. We gotta make some major changes.
Yeah, no one told me this would happen.
So they've been spoiled.
Yes.
What you got for them?
Yeah. So kind of, I think the focus here is like assessing the situation and really is what not to do. Right.
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 Avoiding the pitfalls.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things is that sticks out to me is they've had such a good run in the market because of their entry point. And, you know, us as humans, we're goldfish. Our short-term memories are we literally will think, you know, what has happened to me recently, and we will forget about the bad times. So I think a lot of times, you know, what they're, especially with this case study, what they're going through is bringing back down to reality. You mm-hmm. know, that's going to cause panic. They're going to try to find some direction or guidance amongst this market turmoil. And that's when it gets you into trouble. You start to let your emotions drive your financial decisions, and that could just be a horrific end result for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think what, even what we see from clients sometimes is like, oh, it's down 20%, but it might go down another 10%. And so right. people are often inclined to be like, well, I can avoid the next 10%. But DJ, kind of what you said before, referring to like trying to time the market and missing the best 7 days is, okay, so you sell and you miss the next 10%, but you have to be right in picking the bottom again.
Yes.
So you have mm-hmm. to be right twice. And more right. often than not, what happens is, okay, you missed the bottom 10%, but then when we get the snapback rally, whatever it is, and we're back above where we started, you've missed out because you're not nimble enough, or you're so worried at trying to, you know, avoid the downside that now you've missed the upside.
Yeah,
and that can really weigh on your returns over the long term.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I think the biggest thing just to keep in mind, the firm philosophy is the 10-year rule. So any money that you need within 10 years should be invested in safe investments, CDs, mm-hmm. municipals, treasuries, things of that nature. If you don't need it, growth. It doesn't matter. It's not growth if the market's doing well. It's growth investments, stocks. Or mutual exactly. funds that invest exactly. in stocks, right? It's mm-hmm. it's those type of investments. It's not about the performance of that security. It's creating a plan, making sure you have a plan, making tactical allocations and adjustments throughout the year, but you're not being emotional. So for you, it sounds like for Sam and Sheila, it sounds like, you know, they're in a situation where it sounds they're more growth tiered. It sounds like if their first house was 2009-ish, mm-hmm. you know, it sounds like they're going to be growth tilted for themselves.
Yeah, younger individuals.
So, yeah.
Right.
You know, so I would say, you know, if you're looking to make emotional changes now, you've missed the boat because we're down 20%.
Right, right, exactly. And I think the preparation goes into what, you know, we don't know what the market's going to do tomorrow or the foreseeable future. We have fundamentals that can give us an idea of what might happen, but the preparation goes into spending time with the client in the good years to remind them to say, hey, we've got this 10-year rule. We're going to make sure that any money you need is protected. So when this does happen, I can't tell you when exactly, but when it does, you're going to be prepared. And we're just trying to be certain about uncertainty, which is, I mean, no one really can, you know, give the impossible, but that's the preparation with the 10-year rule. I think
absolutely.
That's important.
Yeah. So I think what we'd need to do now is just kind of take a look at your allocation, right? You want to kind of look at your what you've got, your winners and your losers. What do you have that's quality investments? What do you have? And make tactical adjustments there. Again, not emotional, but we will even in 2008. Mm-hmm. Hensler was making adjustments to a portfolio tactically, selling out of a growth investment that maybe has lost something, a change in, you know, their CEO. Something we saw something going on within the company or the organization, and we said, you know what, we don't like where they're headed. Let's trim that out. Again, it's tactical. Not losing value in the market is not a tactical adjustment for research, right?
Right.
You can lose value.
Yeah.
But if the fundamentals of that company are there, we continue to hold.
I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find many companies, like I said, outside the energy sector that have a positive return year-to-date. That doesn't mean that they're bad companies.
Right.
By any means. It doesn't mean you should sell them because the stock is
down. Just because it's down is not it. And again, we do tactical changes for tax loss harvesting. So if a company that we like is down, you can sell it at a loss. Don't buy that back for 31 days, and then we go back into that position. That's just harvesting a loss, offsetting, you know, gains somewhere else. So that's also something that you'll want to consider when you look at kind of your current allocation.
Sure, and I think just like from an overall, you know, balance sheet standpoint, you know, something that these two can look at is, and this is outside of, you know, the stock market, but what debt do you have? Because as we've continued to preach, interest rates are moving higher. So if you have credit card balances,
it's going up.
Those are going up.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
If you have any sort of adjustable, you know, rate type of debt, it's the cost of it is going up. So if you have excess cash on the sidelines, hard to find a better time to pay that debt off than now, because it's going to get a lot more costly for you to carry.
Right. Yeah. And I know we've talked about it before, but we still have some individuals come in and that they have a higher mortgage rate. They missed the boat on, I didn't get it at 2.5%, so I can't do it now. If you're in the 7s, 8s, and we've seen it in the 9s, this year I met with a potential client with a 9% interest rate. They didn't do it because they didn't hit the low. Now's the time to look at a refinance. Oh. It's still better to save a little bit, even at a 6%
interest
rate.
It's hard to imagine that exists, but it does.
Because we're emotional. Well, I couldn't get it at the best price I can, so I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to stay where I'm at. Reevaluate that debt. You're absolutely right. Reevaluate. That's very important.
Another item to keep in mind is don't stop investing because the market is down. Because, you know, we always encourage you to continue to dollar cost average, because you're getting stocks at a big discount to what you're paying just 6 months ago, 12 months ago.
Yep.
Especially like if you contribute to a retirement plan, if you're investing in your 401k, do not stop those contributions. In my opinion, if anything, increase them. I know personally, I've increased mine, because do I think the market might go lower? It might go lower, but I want to continue to buy. Exactly. If you have that long-term approach, you're lowering your costs over time. And you know, studies show that you're going to come out ahead by dollar cost averaging into the market.
And with the dollar cost
average, it can be scary, but continue to invest.
Absolutely. Right. And diversification. It's not putting all your funds in a drip program because your company has that. You get a discount and you're doing a drip. You've got to diversify your portfolio. You know, you need to make sure that the diversification's there. Many different sectors, different weightings within those sectors, different securities. And I know if you're just starting in a 401k or just starting to invest, it'll be little amounts of money into that, whatever it is you're buying.
Right.
But still, over the long term, you're never going to pick whatever sector is up, one sector is going to be down. We don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
That's why you want to have many different securities and many different sectors to make sure that you kind of encompass all of the moving parts of what's happening in the stock market.
Yeah, and that brings in the idea of rebalancing as well. We preach this, I feel like it's every other week, I feel like, on the radio show, we talk about rebalancing your portfolios.
I was going to wonder if rebalancing right now is a wise choice, because then you would be selling and...
You'd be selling some of your winners.
Right.
But to the point that they're overweight. I'm not saying that you should sell, like, for example, energy. I'm not saying get underweight energy. I'm saying if your portfolio positions are well in excess of what, you know, either your recommended weighting is or the index weight is, consider trimming it. You're just getting back to market weight, and you're seeing cheaper stocks in, you know, maybe it's tech, maybe it's discretionary. It all goes back to high quality. Right now, more than ever, is when active management matters, in my opinion. And you can see that, because for the last 15 years, everyone said, buy an index fund, buy an index fund. There are so many actively managed mutual funds out there right now that are beating the benchmark because in times of volatility and a sell-off, those who focus on fundamentals, high quality, companies with predictable cash flows, earnings that, you know, okay, things might, interest rates may go up, we might see a slowdown, but, you know, a tobacco stock, people aren't just going to stop smoking.
No.
Yeah.
Oh,
if anything, they're probably going to ramp it up when things are a little bit tough. Yeah. You know,
it's a stock picker's market. You know, things may go lower, but if you're picking good quality names, you're going to be okay, and you can you know, rebalance and move back into some of those names that you're a bit underweight in.
Yeah, I think the fundamentals is so important, because it takes the emotion out of it. You know, if you're investing in cryptocurrency, you're emotionally going into and out of that, right? You think that, well, my goodness, it's such a great, you know, future. It's going to happen. But then look at what's happening. You know, you've lost 50% of
70%.
Market. 70%. Yeah. It's insane what's happening right now.
Yeah, I just glanced at those headlines.
Fundamentals are so important. I mean, if you've got high quality investments, you don't have to worry about this type of, you know, market fluctuation.
Yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Right. And I think one last thing to mention before we wrap it up here is you know, right now is kind of a tough time. There's a lot of variables. The market's a little crazy. Just as humans, we are not built to deal with this level of ambiguity. So by default, you know, we need some level of guidance. And I think a financial advisor or a team that understands the behavior and the fundamentals to help you continue and look over that long-term fence, if you will, for the long-term outcome is the best bet right now.
Absolutely.
All right. Good conversation, guys. Hopefully that you know, gives you an idea of things to avoid in terms of market volatility. Killen, when we come back?
Yes, we've got our listener questions. We're talking where to put that emergency fund, and I've got another one that's a psychology, you know, little interesting there for you, Zach. No, it's like I planned this. Oh, it's amazing. All right, you're listening to Money Talks, your trusted resource for your money, your future, your life.
You give me that funny feeling in my tummy.
Got a question for the Money Talks experts? Call our question hotline, 855-429-9166. Or email us at drgene@hensler.com. That's D-R-G-E-N-E at hensler.com. We're on most social media platforms under Hensler Financial or on the web at hensler.com and at henslermoneytalks.com.
The Federal Reserve just announced it is raising its benchmark interest rate 0.75 percentage point.
When things change,
the sharpest hike since 1994.
Money Talks.
Welcome back to Money Talks. Guys, we're here for our final segment of the day. And one of my favorites, we get to answer listener questions. Because you never know what you're going to get.
Right? I go through the mailbag. I pick the ones that are most appropriate for the hosts that I have scheduled that week.
Well, we have some time. We definitely have some timely questions.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. John from Stonecrest writes in, I have been watching and reading the headlines about all these CEOs and especially Elon Musk and how he's running Tesla. Mm. I absolutely agree with his no remote working policy. His email, if you don't show up, I'll assume you resigned. I love it. Anyhow, his opinion, not necessarily mine. I like working from home. He says, I'm ready to move a good chunk of money into this stock, but my advisors tell me to put on the brakes.
Mm, yes, I think you can look at this from two different ways. There's like a behavioral aspect of it and fundamental.
Absolutely. And, you know, I happen to have a behavioral financial expert and a research analyst on the show.
Well, would you look at that?
Shocking.
Wow. Look at it.
Zach, let's start with you. Let's start with you.
So I think the first thing I would point out here is I think that what you're reading did its job.
Oh, absolutely.
It got your attention. You're getting excited. You know, you're thinking about a way of like, ooh, this is going to be, think about all the possibilities. Mm-hmm. But let's look at availability bias. And so what is that? That basically says that, you know, more often humans judge their probabilities based off of information, corroborating information. So anything that can, it's almost like a confirmation bias.
I mean, it is really literally on every headline, on every news. So he's getting it from all directions.
Right, right. And, you know, when you think about investing in this manner should not be this exciting. And I say it that way because most often than none, when we're talking about good, solid investments, it should be kind of boring. You know, yeah. It's not as exciting. It's the long-term play. But I would say that, you know, to that point, you have to be careful because this is you're looking at a media response bias. And, and you know, if we go and we start taking advice from pundits that are giving, you know, more generalized thoughts about investments, you know, that can get us into real trouble. So what I would say to John is probably to listen to his advisor because his advisor's probably thinking about the fundamentals and not just what a book said or an article that got your attention in the first place.
And I always encourage people, it's like, if you have interest, you know, invest in things that you believe in and that you like, if you're investing in your own, and that's great in this case, but not necessarily, it shouldn't be based solely on like aligning your views with how the CEO views things. You know, that's you're ignoring the actual fundamentals of the company. For example, Tesla, Elon Musk is an incredible, you know, inventor and CEO of Tesla. He's done a phenomenal job. Just look at the success of Tesla, right? But that doesn't mean that it's necessarily a great investment right now. Mm-hmm. You have to consider valuation still. And at 90 times earnings, to say it's expensive is probably an understatement.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, earnings are growing at, you know, in considerable pace, let's say ballpark 30, 35%. So when you consider that on a peg basis, it's far from the most expensive stock we see, but it is expensive. Mm-hmm. And it is also in an industry where competition is getting to be more and more. Tesla, you could argue, had like the first mover advantage. They're the first company to solely focus on electric vehicles. So you see them everywhere.
Right.
But as Ford and Volkswagen and Honda and all these companies enter the market, I mean, for the longest time, you've had a market cap on Tesla that was bigger than, you know, the three largest competitors behind them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it just, I the math doesn't make sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you want to be grounded in some sort of fundamental basis, in addition to having an interest in the company and believing in the product or right. the service it right. is that they're offering.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm guessing we kind of agree with his advisor.
We do. Yeah, yeah, we do. And there will probably come a time where we're like, okay, Tesla at this level looks attractive. I mean, you look at what it's done this year. It's almost, you know, at one point it was almost cut in half from the high. But that's not to say it's cheap, right?
Yeah.
Just because it's down 50% doesn't mean it's cheap.
But if you say that, and then if your employees call your bluff, you've got a problem. And then if you fire half your employees, you're going to have a growth problem.
Yeah, and that's like, that's the way the world is right
exactly.
now.
Right? Yeah. And your demand is very high.
So
for your
employees will go to other Ferrari. They are going to go all electric in the next 10 years. They announced this week. Lamborghini's doing it. DeLorean's coming back. They're doing it. Plus, all of the regular manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So there's jobs out there for your employees. So you got to be very careful not to call the bluff. Mm-hmm. Because you're going to have to commit on that.
If anything, you can make the argument that right now is, you know, for Tesla is a very fragile time to make the right decisions as a CEO to make sure that you're going to capitalize on what's going right and what's going wrong.
Yeah. Sure.
All right. Moving on. Let's hit Peter from Carrollton. He says, I have emergency cash in a money market with an APY of 0.9%. It's a major online bank. And the reason I started there was because it had a low minimum and no fees. My emergency reserves are above 10,000. So I'm wondering if there is a better place to park this money.
Yeah. So this is such a timely question to ask because I've answered so many questions in the past month about, you know, people have sold their homes, let's say, and they're on the sidelines now.
Yeah.
They're like,
yeah,
I have $500,000, but I don't want to tie it up. I need liquidity. Mm-hmm. I need safety. What do I do with it? So for me, it's like step one is always let's define what the need is for this money. If this is if this is true emergency reserves, or this is, hey, it might be 6 months, it might be 90 days. I might want to buy a house or something like that. Well, then it's absolutely imperative that we don't lock that money up for longer than that. Right.
Right.
Second thing is liquidity. Should you need to get out of it, can you do so quickly and easily and without, you know, a huge penalty? So I'm impressed that you can get a 0.9% on a money market fund.
I'm wondering if that's like a introductory rate
It could be. And the online banks are often the first to move, right? Mm-hmm. So as rates move higher, you can typically get a more attractive rate quicker at these online banks. But it's also just important to see what your options are. I can tell you right now, I'm looking at a money market fund at Schwab, and it's paying one basis point.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a 30-day treasury at 1%. And every 30 days, you can continue to roll that. Now, is it a bit of work? Sure. But it's a treasury. It's the safest investment you can make, right? And you know that money's going to be there. And if you can just hold out 30 days every time. Now, if you have a longer time horizon for that cash balance, you could look further out, you know, in maturities. At 1 year, if you lock up your money for 1 year, you can get over 3% in a treasury. So let's say, hey, I know I don't need this money for 1 year. It's, you know, $100,000. Why not make $3,000 on that in a 1 year period?
But then again, what is the penalty for getting rid of it?
Sure. You know? So when you're trading a security like that, it's different than if you're buying like a bank CD. You can buy secondary market CDs like we buy here, tradable CDs. And your risk is let's say I buy this CD and it's a 1 year CD. 9 months from now, I have a liquidity event. I need to sell it. Well, you may sell it for less than $100. So there is a potential loss of principal. On something so short term, I would expect that amount that you lose to be extremely small, very, very little.
So it really just depends on like what, like you said,
what rates do. So if rates continue to move higher, you know, then the value of that bond, because it has to adjust in price to compensate for where rates are now, would likely be lower. If you had, but as you get closer and closer to maturity, let's say that in the 11th month you have to sell it, the likelihood that you're taking a meaningful discount on that is very, very low. And in the meantime, you're getting coupon payments, you're accruing interest, and you don't forfeit that interest on a typical, you know, tradable CD like you would at a bank.
You can split the difference. Let's say, it's 0.9. There are things that you can get for a little bit higher rate. That's okay because it's the safety aspect. So take $5,000, keep it in your current, and buy a municipal.
Exactly right. Guys, been a great show. What do we got next week? Up or down, Zach?
I'm going to go up.
DJ?
I think we're down.
Kelly Lynn?
Down.
I'm going up. Have a great week.
All material presented is from sources believed to be reliable and current, but accuracy cannot be guaranteed. The contents are intended for general information purposes only. Information provided should not be the sole basis in making any decision and is not intended to replace the advice of qualified professionals, such as tax consultants, insurance advisor, or attorney. Although this material is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information with respect to the subject matter, it may not apply in all situations. This is not to be construed as an offer to buy or sell any financial instruments. It is not our intention to state, indicate, or imply in any manner that current or past results are indicative of future profitability or expectations. Portfolio holdings discussed are subject to change. There is no guarantee that in the future these securities will be held in the Hensler accounts. As with all investments, there are associated inherent risks. Please obtain and review all financial material carefully before investing. Hensler is not licensed to offer or sell insurance products. This overview is not to be construed as an offer to purchase any insurance products.